back at it. My goodness, what a weekend. Oklahoma State wins on the road. Oklahoma wins on the road. And we now have an all the marbles bedlam situation yet again. But before we get to that, let's bring in Kyle Porter, editor of Pistols Firing Blog. You had a fun little weekend, too, not including Oklahoma State Cowboys, but the Dallas Cowboys.
I did. I didn't want to talk about it last week because I didn't want to put it out there and then for it to potentially fall through at the last minute. But Mrs. Pistols and I got invited to go to the Dallas Cowboys Baltimore Ravens game with none other than the benefactor emeritus. Is that what we're calling him? Of Oklahoma State, Boone Pickens.
Don't call him the owner. That's what like people nationally call him. They go, the Oklahoma State owner, Boone Pickens. I just call him Booster.
Yeah,
Mega Booster.
Yeah, Mega Booster Boone Pickens. We got to sit in his suite for the Cowboys Ravens game and had a blast. Could not. I it's funny. I was talking to my wife on the way down there, and I said, you know, I've never been to an NFL game here. I've been to college games, been to a Final Four at that stadium, but never to an NFL game. And now I can't go back. I can't sit in regular seats. We had free crab. We had an open bar at noon on a Sunday. I mean, it was. It was the way to watch an NFL. Our suite was, his suite is like two or three suites down from Jerry Jones. I mean, it was.
What yard line?
We were on like the 20, I think. But I mean, it's really incredible to just walk in there and see just. It's a different world. You know, like you go to these games and you're sitting with everybody and the people. Sitting in the suites, it's almost like being in a completely different building. They had a live band out in this common area. I mean, it didn't feel like being at a football game. And got to chat with Boone a little bit, and we had a really nice. His PR guy is kind of my contact there, and super nice. Really enjoyed watching the game with him and talking about just you know everything that he does. Boone's life. It was a lot of fun.
Did you bring an olive branch with you and present it on behalf of Mike Gundy?
Well, I don't know. Somebody brought this up, but maybe Boone and I are in the same boat. You know, I'm not beloved by the Oklahoma State Athletic Department either, so I don't know if we're kindred spirits in that. But Boone was rocking his Masters gear. One of our Kyle Boone joked that he wore Masters gear to impress me. I am pretty sure that's not what happened.
You had to like the irony, though, that he was wearing that.
Yeah, it was great. My favorite part of the day, other than we took a picture with him at the end, and he kind of slapped me upside the shoulder because I was not paying attention to the picture. It was kind of, I felt like, you know, my grandfather just reprimanded me during a photo shoot. But his wife, who's been married to, I think, for 2 years now, Dez scored his second touchdown. And she ran up to the front of the suite and threw up the X. Like, yes. Just it was because everybody in the suite's just kind of milling about and talking. And there was a conversation about who the next like Secretary of Labor is going to be. But like it wasn't a they weren't like opining on it. They were like discussing like who it actually is. And it hasn't been announced yet. Wow. Yeah, it was pretty humorous. But so all of a sudden she just runs up, throws up the X, everybody's going crazy. It was pretty surreal, to be honest. It was pretty cool.
So were you like, hey guys, have you checked out my blog? Forget about the Secretary of Defense or whatever you're discussing. I have a really cool blog and I evaluate yards per play.
Well, my contact Jay, that's kind of what got us the invite. He said he reads it every day and has really appreciated it. And there was Mike Holder, one of Mike Holder's people that works in his office was there. So it was definitely, you know, some Oklahoma State chatter. A lot of those people went to the Oklahoma State TCU game on Saturday and then came over for Dallas and Baltimore on Sunday. So it was a lot of fun. You know, it's kind of a once in a lifetime type deal, and we definitely appreciated not having the kids, just getting to kind of do our own thing and really have a fun time.
That's really cool, man. That looked like a great time. Where was my invite, by the way? That's okay. I had to work.
Well, we could have done a live. How good would a live podcast from Boone's suite have been during the Cowboys game?
You could have got him on the record about Gundy and stuff, too. That would have been great. But no, What a weekend, Kyle. I mean, we every season we start out, you know, we want it to be bedlam for a Big 12 championship. And
yeah,
it's kind of becoming an annual event, and we get it yet again. Just what are your thoughts on finally getting another All the Marbles bedlam again?
Well, you know, for Oklahoma State, fourth time in 6 years, and that's an outrageous stat that they've played the final game being bedlam for the Big 12 championship. 2011, they won it. 2013, they should have won it. Last year, obviously, got smoked, and now this year. It's crazy. I mean, it's really cool. And we talk about the college football playoff and all that, so whatever. Like, bedlam being for the Big 12 title, 4 times in 6 years for Oklahoma State specifically, that's a cool thing. Like, I think that goes underrated in terms of how people perceive everything within the state, within the Big 12 conference. And you need to look no further than Texas to see that it, you know, this doesn't happen every year for every program. It's a rarity, and I don't know. I'm already fired up. I'm glad we have 2 weeks. Do you wish we had a shorter time or a longer time to talk about the lead up to Bedlam?
I wish it was shorter. This is gonna be a long 2 weeks. I mean, we're already, you know, I'm already ready for the game, and we have to wait 2 weeks. But I think what it illustrates to me, Kyle, is just how good of a football coach Mike Gundy is. Like, I hope you threw a few of those stats you just recited to Boone. I mean, I hope if they lose to Oklahoma, Boone doesn't come out and say it's ridiculous they're not competitive against OU, because what Mike Gundy has done is he has turned Oklahoma State, which OSU fans don't want to hear this, but it's not an easy place to win at in Stillwater, Oklahoma, going up against OU and Texas and everyone else. What he's done is he's turned Oklahoma State into the second best program in the Big 12.
Yeah.
Behind Oklahoma.
Yep.
Just look at the disaster that Texas has been. Look at Texas Tech. They lose by 60 points to Iowa State. Like, and there's a reason, Kyle, the Big 12 makes Bedlam the last game of the year on championship weekend. This is kind of what they expect. They expect Mike Gundy to have his team positioned to win a Big 12 championship. And it underlines in Sharpie how freaking good of a head coach Mike Gundy is in the program he's built. It's remarkable, and it's a testament to him. It's a testament to the program he's built, and just – I mean, what else can you say? He's done an amazing job.
Yeah, well, it's going to be Bedlam on the last weekend for the last time for a while, I think, this year, because with the Big 12 going to the Big 12 championship game next year, they can't put it on the last weekend anymore, can they?
I don't think so. I mean, you have to do everything you can to avoid a rematch a week later. That would just be – I know it's already happened with the Pac-12 title. I think UCLA and Stanford played back-to-back weeks. But that was a joke too. I mean, I think if you anticipate Oklahoma State and OU being your two best teams, which I think you have to at this point, especially if Rudolph and Mayfield come back next year.
Good gosh.
I think that you almost have to, although it would kind of be depressing for me and you, like, and every, all the fans, we're so used to having OU and OSU be the last week of the year.
Yeah.
To have it in like October wouldn't feel right, but I think that's probably what they're going to have to do.
Well, yeah, you're right. And my hope is that they don't do something crazy and move it to, like, you know, the end of September or the beginning of October, because that, really for your schedule, that makes the most sense. If you feel like that's going to be a potential Big 12 title matchup. I don't know if they'll even take that into account. Knowing the Big 12, they won't. But, it is a bummer, because it does feel like the whole season builds up to your final rivalry game. And it probably feels like that for everybody, but especially so when it's like this year, Michigan, Ohio State, or Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, and even Auburn, Alabama this year, to where those guys are, you know, they've got a lot on the line. So, yeah, I mean, it's incredibly impressive that those two programs continue to emerge year after year. I did a post last week on the blog. Since, I think it's 2011 or 10, they're by far the two winningest programs in Big 12 conference games. And I think third was Baylor, and that's about to drop off the planet with the way they're recruiting. Yeah. and all that. So, I don't know. I love it. I'm fired up for it. What'd you think about TCU?
It's great. And you wanted to tape the podcast. You texted me at like 8 a.m. or something, and I was asleep. And this is what was playing in my head. Hang on a second. This is my thoughts on All the Marbles Bedlam.
Okay.
I was asleep as you texted me, and this is what was playing in my head. What a wonderful world we live in. And I think to myself, what a wonderful bedlam. That was playing in my head as you were grinding at 8 in the morning.
That's amazing. That's really good. Yeah, it's going to be fun yet again. I hope it's
just like,
I hope it's more of a 2013 or 12 or 14 type game than 2015, because last year wasn't fun. The build-up was fun. The lead-up to the game was fun. But the game was awful. I mean, it was over in the first two possessions.
Yeah, and I think it's very easy for everyone to forget that Mason Rudolph didn't play in the game.
I know.
J.W. Walsh was playing. And, like, look, we all love J.Dub. We all love the general. But he didn't have a chance to beat Oklahoma. He didn't. And Mike Gundy talked a lot about this after the TCU game, is how banged up they were on defense.
Yeah.
They really didn't have a chance on defense or offense in that game. They were not the team that had won 10 games going into that one, because Baylor really just smacked them around and quite frankly injured Mason Rudolph. They beat him up so bad. So it's a much more even fight this year.
Yes, it is. Let's talk about TCU. It's time for the Coop Ale Works Toast of the Week. Coop Ale Works, brewing great tasting craft beer in Oklahoma City. Try the flagship F5 IPA, the bold DNR Belgian Strong Ale, or the refreshing Horny Toad Blonde. Probably some people in Fort Worth had a few of those last weekend. For your next watch party, tailgate, or get together with friends, enjoy a cold Coop Ale Works, and please remember to drink responsibly. Who are you toasting this week, Carson?
Well, I have two.
Okay.
I could have 22 after that game against TCU, but first and foremost, I have to go with Chris Carson, my namesake Carson. he deserves to double fist some DNRs for absolutely trucking two dudes on the same play. And just really, it's of all the narratives that have gone on with Oklahoma State, the most surprising and probably most rewarding for Mike Gundy and his staff is Chris Carson's emergence. You could tell that they loved this guy. He started games when we thought he shouldn't be starting. And whatever happened while he was injured, whether it was a mindset thing, a physical thing, where he got healthy, he has looked like a completely different running back. And he looks like the guy that they recruited out of Georgia, out of junior college, that was committed to go play at Georgia. And now he looks like freaking Herschel Walker running dudes over. I mean, he's been sensational. And I mean, I can't believe how different he looks compared to maybe the Central Michigan game this season, when he was just, you know, running his head into a wall, just going nowhere. And it's just, he deserves all the DNR for me, Kyle.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you know, it's weird. It's hard to pinpoint what changed for him. I don't know if it was just being more rested at the end of the year. A lot of people have pointed out maybe it's Justice Hill taking his starting job, just kind of pissed him off. But he just has looked so different. And I think, you know, as with most things, I think it's multifaceted. I think part of it is the offensive line's playing a lot better right now. And so, you know, anybody's going to run better when they have bigger holes to run through. And so I think that's part of it as well, but he has been, he's been just incredible. I mean, I agree with you. And now you've got him and Justice Hill. I mean, I wrote it today, they're averaging combined, Carson's averaging like 70 a game and Justice Hill's averaging like 110 a game in Big 12 games only. So they're averaging a combined like 180 a game, which is just an outrageous number when you look at where Oklahoma State was at last year running the ball.
Gundy wanted to average like what, 120 yards a game? That was like his goal.
I think it might have been 140, because they averaged like 125 last year.
I think 125 was the number he said.
Oh, was it?
They averaged last year.
Was it the number? Okay.
He just wanted to get back to it.
But that's like bottom in the country. I mean, that's like bottom 10 in the country. That's not good.
Well, and you mentioned the blocking. Like, Greg Atkins deserves a DNR as well. I mean, just the job he's done turning this offensive line around. And your man Thomas Fleming, his Chalk Talk's up on the blog right now, kind of diagramming the zone blocking schemes they've gone to. Obviously, it goes hand in hand. You have to have better blocking. But the running backs have completely transformed the running game. And the reason I'm toasting DNR to Chris Carson is, Have those two been resuscitated yet? Those two TCU defenders? Are they still? Are they okay?
Well, two is more like four. He had a run in the first half where he bowled over a couple guys as well. I mean, it's he's scary when he's running downhill. I'm not getting in front of him. It would be pretty ugly. Do you have another one, or do you want me to go?
I have another one, but you go ahead.
I'm going to go – I hope I'm not stealing yours. I feel like I might be, but I'm going to go Chris Lacy. Chris Lacy, 109 yards, another touchdown. He was – I'm toasting an F5 IPA to him, by the way. He's been unbelievable. And, you know, two straight 100-yard games. He's making catches that are very James Washington-like, where he's going up and twisting his body around and – you know, I think Rudolph really trusts him, throwing it to his back shoulder and just saying, hey, this guy's probably going to catch it. Because you can't do that with everybody, right? You can't, you know, I don't know if you can do that with a Dylan Stoner. I don't know if you can do that even with a Juwan Seals at times. But Rudolph trusts him, and he's going to him in big spots. And Lacy's making big-time catches. And when you've got, you know, I wrote about this, but the thing that creates is when teams are doubling James Washington, when they're putting their best guy in James Washington, if you've got a go-to guy on the other side, or in OSU's case, two of them, three of them, it's so much easier to game plan for Mike Yurcich when you've got somebody on the other side that you can go to. And Yurcich did a great job. He went at their freshman cornerbacks. He went it at their inexperience, and Lacy made plays. So F5 IPA to Chris Lacy this week for me.
I mean, how loaded is OSU a wide receiver?
That's a joke.
I mean, those two catches he made, the touchdown catch and the one right before that along the sideline, and then you add in the catches against West Virginia, the two touchdown catches he had, like, those are as good of hands and catches you'll find in college football. And this guy is, what, their third, fourth receiver?
Yeah, I mean,
maybe even further down that if Aitman's healthy.
Yeah, and Tyron Johnson, the transfer from LSU, who was
maybe Casey Dunn deserves a toast.
Yeah, maybe so.
But you did not steal my second one.
Okay, good.
I'm going with the head ball coach, Mike Gundy. Mm. He's cracking open a horny toad blonde in Fort Worth. Gundy Badger does not care if he's in Fort Worth. He even has a purple can. As he sits down, and I hear, Kyle, that the horny toad blonde pairs nicely with a banana. So he washed down that banana he ate in post game with a nice horny toad blonde, and it just goes back to what I was talking about earlier. Just the program Mike Gundy's built, it's remarkable, and that mullet has really unfurled itself. We were kind of waiting for it to lengthen, and boy, it has blossomed.
Did you see the GIF I made today?
Of him running with it bouncing on his shoulders?
It's bouncy. Somebody sent me a photo from ESPN.com where he's running out, and it looks like a cape. Like, it's like flying in the wind. It looks like a flag, like, just at half-mast.
That's what you and I were hoping for back in August.
Yeah.
This situation right here with the visor on. The visor really kind of reins it in, too.
Well, and I think it does. I think we even joked about him making it all the way to Bedlam without cutting it, and he's definitely not cutting it now. I mean,
I think he was at the start of the season, but I think he just said, "Screw it, I'm not cutting it the last like month."
Yeah,
because it would be a lot longer if he hadn't cut it, I would think.
Oh, so you think he trimmed it at the first of the year?
I think he kept it pretty trimmed to start the season, first couple months of the season, because it would be like to his shoulders. I mean, if he hadn't cut it.
What do you think? Like Bill Snyder thinks about a coach in his league having a mullet.
he probably views it the same way he views like Twitter and social media, and just no time for it, no respect for it. But no, just all the horny toad blonde for Mike Gundy, and I guess we found out that Bedlam's at 11:30 a.m., which I think's a good thing if you're Oklahoma State. They're used to 11 a.m. kicks, and it keeps Norman from being just on fire at, you know, for a night game.
Yeah, I agree, and I think, you know, I do want to make a little bit of an argument in favor of the Big 12 right here. I think they were smart to do this, or whoever did it. I guess Fox did it. I don't know. I still don't know who does any of that stuff. But you've got the Pac-12 title game on Friday night. You've got ACC and Big 10 on Saturday night, and then you've got SEC on Saturday afternoon. So you don't really want to go up against any of those. You put it Saturday morning, and you kind of stand – you know, you're kind of over by yourself. So I get why they did it. It's not, it's fun to make fun of, but if you're Oklahoma State, it's like you said, it's a good thing. And I think if you're the Big 12, it's probably the best time slot if you don't want to go against Alabama, Florida, or the two title games on Saturday night.
Yeah, I mean, they're between a rock and a hard place, and you did a good job explaining it there and on your blog that you want to get the most eyeballs on it. And playing it at 6 or 7 against, you know, the other two conference title games, that's not a good recipe.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I mean, just get it on an island, get the most eyeballs on it. It's not ideal for the fans. It's really not ideal for OU having to host the game at 11:30 in the morning. But as far as football is concerned, it's good for OSU. So I'm with you, though. It's going to be a long 2 weeks having to wait for that game.
How good is Justice Hill?
Well, I mean, he's about to break Thurman Thomas's freshman rushing record.
He did. He broke it.
For career or for the season?
He
broke it for a game.
No, he broke it for the season. It was the true freshman rushing record. I think Thomas was like 850 or 40 or something. And then the all-time freshman rushing record, which was Mike Hamilton, who redshirted, is 961, and Justice Hill is 18 yards away from that.
He's awesome.
He's going to hit 1,000 yards. I mean, it's unbelievable.
It's amazing. And it's crazy to think back, Kyle, to like our first podcast before the first game. We were like, who's playing running back? There's like five. They had the or of like five different dudes. And you had an uninspiring Chris Carson leading the way back then. And just exactly what they had to have happen has taken place. Like, there was a lot of hype around Justice Hill. Can he be the kind of the elixir to the running game? Is he talented enough to do that? The answer is a resounding yes. He has made things go. And I agree with you. I think he had something to do with Chris Carson getting his game in gear.
I mean,
he was tired of losing carries to a true freshman. And I think that because honestly, Kyle, we had talked in years past, the year before, it seemed like Chris Carson was going to get the start no matter what happened, just because the coaching staff loved him.
Right.
And you can get kind of complacent if you know you're going to start, if you know you're going to get the carries. So maybe that was what he needed. And I can't say enough good things about Justice Hill. It's amazing that there's another two more full years of him to go. Maybe three.
Three, yeah. Well, maybe.
He might go pro. I mean,
you know, I wrote this after the game, but how much does Mike Gundy love just running for 330 yards and only throwing? I think they only threw it like 11 times in the second half. I mean, he said it after the game. He said, this is how we used to win football games. And we've talked about how, you know, he's very conservative. He likes to run the ball. He likes to play conservative. He had to love them going for, I think they went for 206 in the second half on Saturday on the ground. I joke that he loved it more than a 30% off sale at Cabela's. I mean, he was just swooning over the 200 yards they put up on the ground in the second half.
It was like Christmas morning and seeing a new Carhartt jacket waiting for him under the tree. But no, like Kyle, like he's built this reputation as this kind of like gunslinger, ex-quarterback, you know, Dana Holgorsen offense. But his bread and butter is running the football. He mentioned it, 06, 07, 08, 09. They led the Big 12 in rushing those years. They had a 1,000-yard back streak for like 6 or 7 years in a row. That's really the bread and butter of Oklahoma State's offense, is running the football. And he takes that personal, too. He even said in his postgame press conference, he was like, yeah, like he goes, that we haven't been able to run the ball the last few years, and that wears on me. And you could tell it had worn on him. That 2014 season just – he took it so personal that they couldn't even run the football for like a yard, and they figured it out. And that was the biggest key coming into this season, is can they run the football? Not only can they run it, they're running it as good as anybody. And that includes Oklahoma, who has a two-headed monster of their own to deal with. But you're right. Like, that had to give him a great sense of pride that Oklahoma State is not only back in the Big 12 title contention, but they're back to doing what he wants to do, and that's run the football.
Well, and it almost feels like the offense has come full circle a little bit. We can go to our graves arguing about this, but not that you're arguing, but other people maybe. I don't think he likes the Dana Holgorsen, Todd Monken offenses. I don't think he loves them. I mean, I think he's fine with them and whatever, but it feels like they've sort of been pulled more back towards the middle of where they were back in 07, 06, 07, 08, where they were just running it a ton and had, you know, somebody in Zach Robinson who was a he was a really good quarterback, but not somebody who's going to throw it 50 or 60 times a game like they had with Whedon. And I think you're just seeing maybe a as good or better version of that offense because Mason Rudolph is better than Zach Robinson as a quarterback. I just, and Gundy said this a couple weeks ago, and I can't remember if we talked about it, but he's like, I don't really like throwing it deep. Like, that just makes me uncomfortable. And he doesn't want to take shots. He doesn't want to run flea flickers, I don't think. And he did it because Dana's obviously a genius, but I just think he really enjoys and was trying to get back to the exact offense that they ran on Saturday, where they're running for 330 yards and scoring 31 points.
Well, I do think he is of the mindset that if you throw it deep, three things can happen and only one of them's good.
Yeah.
And so I do think that's, but there's been a little push and pull between him and Yursich in that way. And that you say he doesn't like flea flickers and reverses and all that. I think Yursich loves that stuff.
That two point
conversion they ran against Kansas State. Like, that's all Yursich. I know you called him the Gundy Badger for running that play, but I think that's all Yursich.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I do agree with you in that the older he's kind of gotten, and maybe he's always been this way, we just didn't view him a certain way when Dana Holgorsen was calling the plays and they were running flea flickers. But I think he is very, you know, he's grown into that CEO role, and he views his program as, you know, like it is, that they're going to win most of their games. They don't do anything stupid. So I think he's just risk averse more so than he was when he was a younger offensive coordinator. I think he's kind of grown into that.
Yeah. Okay. I want to talk about the defense and then about maybe the college football playoff and some basketball, but first we need to hear from our sponsor this week, Chris's University Spirit. Chris's University Spirit on Campus Corner in Stillwater, Oklahoma is proud to be your one-stop cowboy shop since 1986 and proud sponsor of this podcast, Pistols Firing. They specialize in custom printed Oklahoma State apparel and merchandise and pride themselves on their excellent customer service. They also offer a full line of custom Greek apparel and can even outfit your Little League team head to toe. They're located at the corner of 3rd and Knobloch on historic Campus Corner. You can follow them on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, and be sure to shop online at chrisuniversityspirit.com. Shop Stilly, shop Chris's University Spirit. Okay, defense on Saturday. Was that the best? That was the best defensive performance you have seen since when, do you think?
I can't even remember a better defensive performance. Maybe 2011 Bedlam. Like, I don't know. Like, 2013 had a really good defense, but Kyle, they pitched a shutout without, Barry J. Sanders doesn't muff the punt, they shut out TCU. Obviously, Kenny Hill helped them out with some horrible throws, and TCU helped them out by running a wildcat with a guy who can't throw it either. But you got to give Glenn Spencer a lot of credit. I thought you made a great point in your 10 thoughts. Like, they've been kind of showing flashes ever since he moved up to the booth. Like, granted, the entire body of work hasn't been great. They gave up a lot of points to Tech, but they started that game with like 3-3 and outs. Like, nobody does that to Tech, I guess, unless Iowa State on the road. But the point remains, Glenn Spencer's done a much better job since he's moved up to the booth. And I don't know if it's just him moving up to the booth rather than trying out different stuff. He's tried out the 3-3-5, which I think has been great against some of the spread offenses. He's doing a lot of different things and it's working, and the players are making plays, obviously, and getting turnovers. So there was a lot of heat on Glenn midway through the year, and I think he's really come up big in the last 2-3 weeks.
Yeah, and they've also been helped because they haven't had – well, two things. They haven't had the big injuries other than Vili Lavini, and then the last couple of weeks Chad Whitener was out, Jordan Burton was out, but – to my second point, they've got a lot of depth, and we've talked about it time and time again, but I think that maybe you're seeing at the end of the year other teams are a little bit more worn down than they are, or maybe they've just been lucky with injuries. I don't know what it is, but that was as impressive a defense. I thought last year they played pretty good defense against TCU. I know TCU put up 29 last year, but that was probably a top five offense in the country by TCU, and you held them to under 30 points. Baylor maybe in 2013 was pretty awesome. I think they beat them 49-14 in Stillwater.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, it's right up there with some of the best defensive performances in the Gundy era.
Well, they're not giving up those massive pass plays. I'm not sure what they're doing differently, if teams just aren't testing them as much. But remember that Baylor game? It felt like Baylor could score every time they had the ball just by throwing it deep. And that's obviously a concern against D.D. Westbrook in Oklahoma. But I'm also interested, Kyle, to seeing if you can look this up for me. You're my unofficial statistician. You're much better with stats than I am. If look up how many plays they've faced up to this point as opposed to last year. I bet it is astronomical because OSU's running the ball so much better this season that they're able to keep them off the field longer. They're facing much less plays, I would think. And I think that goes a long way, too, with their depth and just how fresh they are. Gundy kept talking about after the game how healthy they are and how fresh they are because their practice time or whatever. But I think more so it's just they're not facing 100 to 90 plays every week.
Yeah, I actually have that in my head because I already looked it up. But last year through 11 games, they faced 79 plays a game. And this year through 11 games, they've faced 76 plays a game. So 3 plays a game doesn't sound like a lot, but when you add it up, 33 plays, it's about a half game, maybe a little less. But the big thing, to your point, is they haven't had any games this year where they've gone they've had one game this year where they faced over 90 plays, and that was against Texas Tech last week. They faced 96. Last year through 11 games, I think they had 4 or 5, and 2 or 3 of those were over 100 plays. So they're not incurring these games where you're facing 100, 105. They faced 109 plays against, I believe it was either TCU or Baylor last year. That's devastating to a defense to have to come back from that next week. And this year they're facing 78, 84, 86, somewhere in that range. So to your point, they've definitely benefited from not playing these elongated games like they were playing last year.
Well, and I think too, the gap between series, I don't know if there's a way to chart that, but it has to be longer just with the way they're able to run the football and move the chains.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
They went 3 and out a lot more last year, I'd venture to guess, just by the nature of the offense of Mason throwing a deep, clock stopping, more plays, quicker drives. So I think that obviously it's a team oriented game. And I remember Justin Fuente was actually talking about this from Virginia Tech, that
your boy,
I like him a lot. He's a good coach. He talks about he will run tempo on offense if his defense has had a chance to rest. But like if he had just gone 3 and out and his defense just got off the field, like he'll slow it down. Like he slows and speeds up his offense based on where his defense is at. And I think that's brilliant. I think that goes a long way. Like it's such a team game, and we tend to look past that and just look strictly at offensive numbers and defensive numbers. But those two go hand in hand. They help each other out.
Yeah, for sure. They do. We need to talk about the uniforms. So let's get to this week's uniform review brought to you by Chris's University Spirit, your one-stop cowboy shop on Campus Corner. And be sure to shop online at chrisuniversityspirit.com. I do want to talk uniforms, Carson, but I've got a baby monitor going off right now, so let me go turn that off. There's not a baby crying, but there's a baby monitor going off. So why don't you give us your uniform opinion, and I'll be back in like 5 seconds.
Okay. Well, first and foremost, the Marshall badge helmet has really, really grown on me. I think it's kind of become, I guess, the go-to logo because I don't think they've worn the regular brand other than the first game of the season. And it didn't dawn on me until Saturday against TCU, just the metallic silver of the star really, I thought, looked great.
Yeah.
And stood out to me. I thought it looked awesome. And I think they initially were going to wear gray pants, and I think once they saw the monstrosities that TCU was wearing, they're like, well, this won't look good, so let's switch to the black pants.
Hey, Carson, why do you hate America?
Why do I hate them? Were they camo? Is that what it was?
Yeah.
Of course. Of course they were. Just such a bad look. But I think the switch to the black pants made it an elite road look. I thought it looked great.
Yeah. I mean, personally, I really like the white gray. They wore it at Arizona. 2012, Wes Lunt, when he threw 18 picks
and 800 yards.
Yeah, 800 yards. That game lasted until like 2:30 in the morning.
She's come a long way since that.
Yeah. Yeah. But I like the white black as well. It's a great look. I think I called the white sheriff star, helmet last week on the podcast, and then I panicked at the last minute and changed it to the the white chrome peat, which they wore at Baylor earlier this year. So I don't know whether to give myself credit for that or not for making the last minute switch.
You will get no credit for that.
Well, I know, but I'm just saying.
Are you Dormy, by the way? In our uniform picks.
Well,
you in Southfield Dormy.
Well, we got the bowl game.
Yeah, but that's what, three? Say I go Ofer.
Yeah,
so you got three, and then the Bedlam, which we both get a free square.
Yeah, so there's five. I mean, I could beat you 5-0, or 6-1, essentially.
Well, how many am I ahead by?
I don't know, a lot.
It might be Dormy.
I will say the one thing I liked about TCU's uniforms is I love their purple helmet. I mean, if you see it up close, it's very intricate. It's got like the frog skin stuff. I don't know. I think it's a sharp look.
The TCU helmet?
Yeah, yeah.
The helmet's good. The rest was just a total disaster.
By the way, if you're a TCU running back, how big do your stones have to be to wear 21?
Was Tomlinson 21 in TCU?
I'm pretty sure.
He wore number 5.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, that's a big fail by you.
Wow, that's embarrassing.
I believe he wore number 5.
Yeah, I think in college. I think you might be right. By the way, I've got my Ryan Leaf jersey on right now.
Yeah, for Wazoo?
Yeah, I need. Yeah, he was number.
Yeah, what's
four.
The? You posted the path that OSU needs. The scenarios.
Let's talk about that. The Big 12 champion. Let's presume that Oklahoma State and Oklahoma are equal. They're not, but let's just for the sake of argument, let's presume they are. The Big 12 champion needs Washington State to beat Washington this weekend badly. Really, really need that, because in that scenario, Washington State would go to the Pac-12 championship to face, I believe, either Colorado or USC. And so any Pac-12 champion would have two losses. Washington State already has three losses. Colorado has two. USC has three. So no matter what, the Pac-12 champ would have two losses, and maybe three if you're USC. Right. Then we're saying Alabama gets in. We're saying Clemson gets in. Oklahoma State or OU needs, I think, Michigan to win out. They need Michigan to beat Ohio State. They need Michigan to win the Big Ten championship game. Because then I think it would be Alabama, Clemson, Michigan. And then the committee would have to choose between a two-loss Big 12 team, either OSU or OU, or a two-loss Pac-12 champ. So we'll say Colorado. Or a two-loss Ohio State team. And I think that entire argument, I think it'd be interesting, but I think you would definitely have a case to make if you're the Big 12 and you just beat a 9-2 team, if you're either OU or OSU going into the college football playoff.
Well, the ironic part of this whole deal is OSU would have a better chance than OU of getting in over Ohio State. I know how ridiculous that sounds.
No, it's true.
OU got destroyed on their home field by Ohio State. Even if Ohio State's third in their division or whatever, they get in over OU. I don't think there's any way that OSU is getting in over Ohio State, even if, you know, they compare their resumes and even if they consider, I mean, are they going to consider that a loss against Central Michigan is what it's going to come down to, which you and I brought up months ago, and it was preposterous at the time.
It was.
That really is what it's going to come down to if OSU wins Bedlam.
So in my scenario, you've got a two-loss Colorado team, Pac-12 champs. A two-loss, we'll say, Oklahoma State team, Big 12 champs, and a two-loss Ohio State team didn't win their own division in the Big Ten. Which of those three teams do you think the committee adds to a playoff of Michigan, Alabama, and Clemson?
Ohio State.
Wow. Really?
Yeah.
That'd be tough to swallow if you're Colorado or Oklahoma State.
Yeah, I agree. But what have we seen the last 2 years with this playoff thing? You're going to have Herb Street on there. You're going to have all the analysts saying, well, I don't care what Ohio State can't help what conference they're in. They're one of the four best teams. They're one of the four. That's all they're going to say is they're one of the four best teams. Look what they did to Oklahoma. I don't care what conference they're in.
Well,
I just think that's, I don't think that's what should happen. I just think that's what's going to happen.
Yes, you're right about all those things, but we also haven't seen the committee take a team that did not win their conference yet, much less their own division.
Sorry, someone's at my door. Hang on one second.
Oh my gosh. Is it Glenn Spencer?
It might be. Hang on one sec.
Okay.
Great radio.
Yeah. Was it?
Sorry.
Was it Spencer?
No, it's a package.
Oh.
I think it's a college football playoff package.
Was it more DNR?
I hope so.
What I was saying is we haven't seen the college football playoff committee pick a team that didn't win its conference. So they picked four teams in 2014, four teams in 2015. All eight of those teams was a conference champion. I would be surprised if the first time they picked a non-conference winning team, it was an 11-2 team, or excuse me, a 10-2 team in Ohio State. I can see what I'm saying is I can see that happening with, say, Alabama loses the SEC title game, which I'm rooting for at this point. I can see an 11-1 Alabama, or I guess that would be a potentially 12-1 Alabama team getting in because they only have one loss. It's hard for me to see a team with two losses not even playing for their conference championship still getting in.
I disagree. I think that's what's going to happen. I mean, I just think they're Ohio State. Now, if this was Wisconsin trying to do that, no chance. But, you know, they got the – it's all about helmets, man. That's what it's about. That's one thing we've learned the last 2 years in this playoff thing is resumes don't matter, helmets matter. I mean, they'll justify it any way they see fit. But I do like that all the coaches are stumping for Mike Gundy. Bob Stoops says they're 10-1. And I think that's going to be so interesting to me, Kyle, is how do they view OSU's loss to Central Michigan? Because Bob Stoops brought up the loss he had to Oregon where they really recovered the onside kick, which this is really – this is nothing like that at all. This is completely unprecedented because the clock had hit zero and Oklahoma State had more points than Central Michigan. And then they ran – as Joel Klatt said, they ran a play for fun. And I just – I don't know how in the world – like I think – I understand if the committee says, look, we're not in the business of deciding wins and losses. It's a loss on their schedule. That's how we view it. But I also think this is an unprecedented circumstance, and this is why we have the human element as well, don't we? To kind of look at it, okay, they won the game. The replay official screwed it up, and they ran a play after the game was over. So it's going to be fascinating to see how they view it.
Yeah, it really is. And to your point earlier, I think that – I mean, the argument for including Ohio State in the playoff in that scenario is, well, they just lost to another team that's in the playoff, which is Michigan, you know, if Michigan were to get in. So, I don't know. I'm fascinated to see how it all plays out. By the time Bedlam rolls around, we will know who the Pac-12 champion is because they play not only this weekend, but they play their title game the Friday night before Bedlam. So that'll be
go Cougs.
That'll be really interesting. Yeah, I'm actually watching Mike Leach videos on YouTube right now about pirates and black holes and whatever else
she's
into.
Should we join the guy who waves the Washington State flag at game day every week and just help him wave it? Just do our part.
Oh man, yeah, it's gonna be. It's going to be fascinating.
How do you feel about Bedlam, by the way?
A lot better than I did last year. You know, I think last year was sort of this, hey, we're playing for the Big 12 title, but not really because J.W. Walsh is not going to beat OU, you know.
Well, we didn't know Rudolph wasn't playing, did we?
Maybe not. I don't remember. I can't remember.
I don't think we knew until Walsh ran out there that Rudolph was out.
Yeah, I can't remember.
There were rumors. Remember, we were reporting all the rumors, like, oh, he's banged up.
Yeah.
Foot. And then Walsh runs out there.
Yeah. This year's it's completely different. Not even, I mean, yes, because of Rudolph, but just because of the run game. You know, it's just a different.
Well, and for me, OU's defense is nowhere near as good as it was last year. I mean, they led the Big 12 in about every category last year. They had really good pass rushers, Devontae Bond, Eric Stryker. You know, I cover OU, and they look nothing like they looked last year on defense. They've lost some key guys. And I know they beat up on West Virginia, but if West Virginia doesn't fumble twice inside the red zone, they're winning that game in the second half at one point.
That's kind of like the Baylor-OSU game, right?
In what way? Just
well,
the fumbles?
Yeah, just fumbling when you're about to score. I mean, it just changes the entire game.
Right, yeah, and my point, though, is you know, West Virginia had a running back run for over 300 yards by himself.
Yeah.
Like that does not shape up well for OU's defense going up against, you know, the two running backs we've discussed. And plus, same goes for OSU's defense, which is why it's going to be such a close game. But how do you think the point spread will be? Do you think OU will be favored by what? Touchdown?
Yeah, I was going to say 6, maybe 7, something like that.
Yeah. I'm with you. I think it's so much different than last year, just the way going into the game with – I think this team's way more confident, obviously, going into this game. Gundy's talked a lot about that, just how where their confidence is at. And Mike Gundy, did you watch his post-game press conference against TCU?
Oh, yeah.
It's a joy to watch.
They all are, but, yeah, it was amazing. But
this one was special, too, because – the way he ends it, or like the soundbite I used last night on TV, he said something about, you know, this is a special team, like it's their team, and he's like, "We'll be there in 2 weeks. We'll be there." Like it was kind of like Wyatt Earp on Tombstone, like, "I'll be there. I'm coming. Hell's coming with me." But he just the swagger in which he said it. It's hard to describe on the podcast, but he's like, In 2 weeks we'll be there. Just the way he said it was just great.
I actually
a banana. It was a full Mike Gundy experience.
I had our press conference guru Clint Davison actually transcribe that one because it was so good. So we're gonna post that on the blog later today. But to your point about West Virginia, they averaged 9 yards per play against OU. They averaged almost a first down a play against OU, and that was the worst output that OU has given up this year. That Texas Tech put up 8 yards a play on them earlier in the year, but West Virginia only ran 65 plays, and they gained almost 600 yards.
Their quarterback is horrible. Howard.
They ran for 10.2 yards per carry, 38 carries, 388 yards.
Yeah, and you can't win when your quarterback just gives it away to the other team like that. So yeah, that's something that's a positive for Oklahoma State. Like OU's defense is not good.
So you think, I guess what you're saying is you think Mason Rudolph's a better quarterback than Skylar Howard?
Yes. Although, are you a little worried about him? He looked pretty terrible against TCU. He only completed 50% of his passes, was missing those short throws again, which are perplexing.
Yeah.
Are you worried about him going into Bedlam?
I'm worried about him in as much as I'm worried about Rhode Mason, non-Kansas State version.
I'm telling you, there's something to that.
Yeah, I think there is. Hopefully he can conjure up some of that 2014 magic where he looked like the second coming of Tom Brady in Norman.
And Brandon Shepherd looked like Justin Blackman.
Yeah, that was – I mean, and again, like we've talked about it every week, Mason Rudolph's 15-0 against teams that aren't Baylor in the Big 12. He's 0-3 against Baylor. It's a stunning statistic every time I look at it. And
that's crazy. And I brought up to you on our postgame show on Periscope, is he going to be the first OSU quarterback to win twice in Norman?
Yeah. I mean, he's got an opportunity. Thanks for reminding me of that. I need to write a post about that. I don't know who has even come the closest, really.
Clint Shelf? Or he only almost won there once.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's I think traditionally been sort of rare to have to even get two starts there, you know, unless you're because even
Josh Fields, maybe.
Yeah.
The list of wins in Norman is very short, and the list of guys who have started more than one game is even shorter.
Yeah. And Fields had a chance to do it in 03. That's the Les Miles microphone game.
Let her rip.
Yeah, and OU let her rip because they won like 52-9, I think, was the score.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, Rudolph's got a chance to, again, do what only Brandon Whedon has ever done, which is win a Big 12 title. So be fun, you know.
It's crazy, too, Kyle. Like, I remember thinking earlier this year, I think I was walking off the field after the Central Michigan game. You know, at Boone Pickens Stadium, they put up the signage that says 2011 Big 12 champions, but they put it kind of like, as my mom would say, whopper jawed. It's kind of like not centered. And the theory behind that is they're keeping room for more.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking of how preposterous it looked on the stadium. Just like, that looks terrible. It's completely out of place. And they're not winning anything now that they lost to Central Michigan. And yet here we are. Mike Gundy's in position again to win perhaps the second Big 12 championship. It's pretty crazy.
Yeah, it really is. And I can't wait. I can't believe we have two weeks to wait of build up and predictions, and yeah, it won't matter when they get out on the field on Saturday, December 3rd. Should be a lot of fun. You've got an audiobook to read, I believe.
Oh boy, is it that time?
I think it is. Unless you have something else that you want to discuss.
I have no more clips for you, but I do have a audiobook warrior poem courtesy of Glenn Spencer. Are you ready for it?
Let's hear it. Let's do it.
Okay. You know, Dave Hudson forwarded it to me earlier in the week and said, good luck with this audiobook. So here goes nothing. This is Coach Bear Bryant.
Oh my gosh.
What are you doing here? Tell me why you are here. If you are not here to win a national championship, you're in the wrong place. You boys are special. I don't want my players to be like other students. Was that Southern accent? You can learn a lot on the football field that isn't taught in the home, the church, or the classroom. There are going to be days when you think that you've got no more to give, and then you're going to give plenty more. You are going to have pride and class. You are going to be very special. My approach to the game has been the same at all the places I've been. Vanilla, the sure way. That means, first of all, to win physically, if you've got 11 on a field and they beat the other 11 physically, they will win. They will start forcing mistakes. They will win in the fourth quarter. There's a lot of blood, sweat, and guts between dreams and success. People who are in it for their own good are individuals. They don't share the same heartbeat that makes a team so great. A great unit, whether it be football or any organization, shares the same heartbeat. I honestly believe that if you are willing to out-condition the opponent, have confidence in your ability, be more aggressive than your opponent, and have a genuine desire for team victory, you will become the national champions. If you have all the above, you will acquire confidence and poise, and you will have those intangibles that win the close ones. That sounds like the Cardiac Cowboys to me, Kyle.
Yes, it does. And your accent sounded like it was from like 8 different countries at different points.
It kind of fluctuates a bit as the longer we go. It's not very consistent.
You went from like South Alabama to like Northern Ireland or something.
I know. I went Rory / Gundy / But yeah, I thought that was a really good poem because it speaks a lot to what we've seen at Oklahoma State this year, winning the close ones in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, it does. And it was nice to not have a close one against TCU finally.
That was a whole new world, wasn't it?
Well, I didn't know what to do. There was like 10 minutes left in the fourth quarter, and I was bored. I was like, can we get it over with? Like, I know Kenny Trill's got some stats to roll up, but I'm done. I'm out. Get me out of here.
I didn't know what to do either.
Yeah. Okay. We're back with a guest on Wednesday. We've got an OU person coming in. He's actually not coming anywhere. He's just joining us.
Calling in.
And yeah, it should be fun. We've got a lot to talk about, a lot more to talk about with Bedlam. Hopefully the national title race or the playoff race shakes out a little bit more this weekend with a Washington State win over Washington. That game's in Pullman, by the way. So that's one thing Oklahoma State has going for it.
Wave the flag.
Yeah, let's
go,
do it.
Mike Leach.
Okay, we'll talk to you on Wednesday, Carson.